Hi, and welcome to Faith Points, a weekly podcast from Faith Point United Methodist Church. If you'd like to join us for worship on Sunday morning, or just want some more info, visit us on the web at faithpointum.org, or you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/faithpointum, or you can find us on Facebook. And now, a weekly message from Pastor Chris Bishop.
Hey friends, thanks so much for being a part of worship today. I am really excited about our three speakers that we have that are going to share with you what God has been up to and doing in their lives. I'm bummed that I can't make it, but I am sure that I will see the video afterwards, and I am sure that you will be blessed by their sharing. As they share though, I want you to hear the grit in their story. How many times that they could have given up, or when the going gets tough, or taking the way that reality sometimes sucks the life and joy out of us. And there is that grit is the key term nowadays, of the way that they persevered when things got hard. And hear the echoes of their story to your story, and see where you might then tell your story in a way that allows others to have the kind of hope that you're going to hear about and work towards that kind of transformation that God calls us to. I'm going to get out of your hair though. We're going to hear from our speakers. We're going to sing a little refrain every single time, reminding us that we are instruments of God's shalom, God's wholeness, God's peace for this world. Thank you guys so much. I cannot wait to hear the amazing stuff that has been happening today. Bye.
So I'd like to welcome our first speaker, Mike Bedeker.
Good morning. So let me start this off right. I am a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, who struggles with addiction, fear, and all kinds of life's issues, and that's why I'm up here to speak. I want to say it's almost been about a year ago. I'm going to call you out, Zach. Zach over here just wanted to do something, and he wanted to start a Celebrate Recovery program. So we started as leaders, and for about 6 months, and then we grew together in that, and then as we grew together in that, and we finally started our official launch in November, and we're still there every Thursday night at Wesley Chapel, 7 o'clock. I invite anyone to come, because everyone here, either it's you or someone close to you, is struggling with something. When I announce myself that way, that's one of the hardest things you can do, is by admitting what your problems are, and you'll never face those problems unless you can say it. It has been an awesome blessing to be part of that. We've seen lives change. People who came and said, I'm here to help, but I don't think I have any problems, realize that, wow, I do have more issues than I thought. And it's been just wonderful to see the change in lives there. I've been doing this for quite a while through my history, and it's always an incredible blessing to see someone else just, you see a weight lifted off of their shoulders. It is, a lot of this stuff goes way back. The hurts go way back from childhood and stuff, and they just carry it around like heavy luggage, and it is amazing to watch someone finally just take that weight and get rid of it. They're finally free. I encourage you, if you know anyone who's struggling, anybody, it's not specific to what it is. It's life's hurts, habits, and hang-ups. So we got you covered. That's everything. Many of you know that I sit on the board of a recovery center in Imesville. And we've been up and running now for 8 years. Things had been slow for us getting launched and started. But I personally believe God was waiting for us, because none of us knew what we were doing. And God needed us to get ourselves right before we could do what he wants us to do. And in the last 2 years, it has been amazing what God has done. God has sent people there. We had funding issues, and the Lord sent a couple to us who He was a professional fundraiser, and she's a professional grant writer. And what they've done for us financially has let us grow. So now we're getting all two more units finished, so we can bring in, we can have up to 26 men staying there. We've been at capacity at 10 people now for about 3 years. We've had about 30 people graduate from the program. We've had a lot of people come in and just could not take it. They're just not ready. But the lives we've seen change here has been amazing. Some of these guys, all they needed was someone to say, "I'll give you a second chance, man. You're worth it." And that's all they needed. And it's amazing to see how they change once someone says, "You know what? I love you enough to help you." Because most people in their lives have given up on them. So, like I said, if you know anyone needs help, you can come to ask me about it. You can always ask Zach. If you need to meet in private because you don't want to be in a group, I get that too. I'm more than willing to help. I'm sure Zach is too. So 7 o'clock, Wesley Chapel. Thanks for letting me share. I'd like to invite Carol Whalen up next.
Can everyone hear me? Okay, I just wanted to be sure. Hello, I am also a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and my name is Carol. Hi. When Pastor Chris approached me asking if I would be interested in sharing a testimony, I said, sure, that would be fine. But really, I was thinking, no. Then I reread his message, and I saw that he had asked if I would share about seeing God at work in my school. And I thought, okay, that should be a little easier. I love my job as a media specialist, and I always have plenty I can share about that. But I still wasn't sure exactly how I could connect it back with seeing God at work in my life. Luckily, God was watching out for me, and he brought me some wisdom a few days ago when I attended the annual conference for the American Library Association. At the ALA conference a few days ago, I was able to hear Jason Reynolds speak. Jason Reynolds is a poet and an author from Maryland who's written many books, including the Miles Morales Spider-Man novel. Jason Reynolds shared some wisdom that he had received from his mother when he was younger. His mother said that churches, synagogues, and temples are not the only sacred spaces. Anything that makes you feel bigger than your burden is sacred, he said. Anything that reminds you of human connectivity and the connectivity of everything around us, anything that pushes you toward service is sacred. Immediately, my ears perked up. That's exactly how I feel about my work as a school librarian. Even when I'm having challenges in my personal life, working at my school makes me feel bigger than my burden. Jason Reynolds also said that sacred principles can be seen in any worship center. Come as you are. All are accepted. No one is turned away. Here, you can build community. He said that those same principles can be seen in schools and libraries. His last words really resonated with me because those are our principles here at Faith Point. Come as you are. All are accepted. No one is turned away. I just never thought about the fact that those same principles apply to my work in a school library. In today's scripture, Paul talks about how to grow as a Christian and develop a relationship with Jesus Christ. Paul says that even though he has not reached that goal, I press on to reach the end of the race and receive the heavenly prize for which God, through Jesus Christ, is calling us. A little more about me. In college, I got degrees in anthropology and education, and I taught middle school before deciding that was too challenging for me. I left, and I worked various jobs before I ended up working in finance doing sales commissions. It challenged me, but there was always something missing. I enjoyed working with salespeople and helping them, and I realized whatever job I had, I needed to be helping people in some way. After having my boys, I stayed home with them and then got back into teaching when they started school. I worked as a substitute teacher for several years. When I was younger, I never thought I would enjoy being a substitute teacher. And yet, once I started teaching again, I loved it. Looking back, I realized that, like Paul, I was only starting to develop my relationship with God. When I worked as a substitute teacher, I loved that I got to work with all the students in the school, every grade level. The students are definitely the best part of my day. I always say that now, as a media specialist, my job is like being a grandparent. I get to spend 45 minutes with every class and then send them back to their teachers. I especially love the school that I'm working in now because I have elementary students in both the regular education setting and severe and profoundly disabled students. Some of those students may not speak at all. With such a variety, I often have to change what I'm doing in order to follow the principle that all are accepted and no one is turned away. With a pre-K class, usually I'll start my lesson with a song and then read a book. We'll do a craft and listen to another song. For several months, that worked out well until one day there was a new student, Anna. As soon as I started showing the video of the song, Anna started wailing. She howled and would not stop crying. Her teacher told me to continue, so I continued and tried to read the book, tried to do some coloring, and I put on one more song. Anna had taken a break from crying, but she started wailing again. I was exhausted when I left their classroom. For several more weeks, I repeated the same scenario with the same results. I was feeling like a failure. Finally, one day, there was a breakthrough. Her teacher said, "Don't play the whole song. Play maybe 30 seconds and then stop. I think she doesn't like the cartoon characters." I started the song, and after 30 seconds, I turned it off. It was so quick that Anna hadn't noticed. I was able to read the entire book with everyone listening. The activity I had planned was for students to come up to the smart board and sort objects by their shape. When it was Anna's turn, not only was she able to sort the objects, she looked at the board and read the names out loud. Square, circle, triangle. I was blown away. Every other time, she had been so worked up and crying, I wasn't able to see how smart she was. Once I had accepted her and that what I was doing wasn't working, I was able to connect with her and see what she was really capable of. My job is definitely not easy, and for every successful day, I have plenty of failures. One time, I was being observed by the assistant principal, and in the middle of a lesson, a student stood up, took out a hot sauce packet, and proclaimed, "I've got hot sauce, anyone want some?" A lot of my classes are very talkative, and when the class is finished, I'm exhausted and wondering what I was ever thinking getting back into teaching. One day when I was feeling frustrated, I left the library and walked into the hallway, and I saw DJ standing up working with his physical therapist. Usually when I see DJ in his classroom, he's sitting in his wheelchair. As soon as I saw DJ working on his walking, whatever frustration I had been feeling vanished. I realized I needed to adjust my view of what made a good day. A good day for DJ is when he can walk up a ramp in his walker. I was feeling frustrated by the fourth graders who had been talking, and yet I would have loved to hear DJ or his classmates talking like that. I've never heard DJ talk. In that moment, DJ made me feel bigger than the burden I had been carrying. DJ is sacred. The hardest part of my job is dealing with the burdens that students have that I can't fix. Dealing with things like divorced parents, homelessness, or mental health issues. Every year, I read the Marilyn Black-Eyed Susan picture books to students. One day, I had planned to read the book Ida Always, which is about two polar bears who have to say goodbye because Ida is old and dying. As a first grade class came into the library, the teacher pulled me aside to let me know that Andre may be out of sorts because his father had just been deported by immigration services. I didn't have a backup plan, so I went ahead and read the book. As the bears talked about how hard it is to say goodbye, Andre started to cry. It took all my strength to finish the story, but I didn't know what else to do. Andre was sacred. Connecting with Andre in that dark moment was sacred. As I work toward my own goal of developing a closer relationship with Jesus, I am often weighed down by those burdens that I can't fix. To help me, I printed out a copy of the Living Bible's translation of Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30. "Come to me, and I will give you rest. all of you who work so hard beneath a heavy yoke. Wear my yoke, for it fits perfectly, and let me teach you. For I am gentle and humble, and you shall find rest for your souls. For I give you only light burdens. Thank you.
I'd like to invite Sarah View to come and speak to us now.
Good morning. My name is Sarah, and many of you know me as Sarah. Many of you probably know me as Jackie's mom, the very energetic 3-year-old that tends to run around. And I'm just really grateful to be asked to be up here today. Carol, I'm identifying with you. I do not like to be up here in front of crowds and speaking. But you know, sometimes you gotta put that discomfort aside because there's a bigger purpose here, right? And I just wanna thank you for sharing what you did, and Mike, for you as well. And I would like to share with you all what I've seen, bear with me, what I've seen God doing in my life this past year. And to do that, I've got to go back several years. So I identify, you know, obviously as being a Christian, a believer in Jesus. I also identify as being somebody who is in long-term recovery from alcoholism. To share with you the story, I got to go back 10 years. When I first got into recovery, I was naive to believe that everything would be smooth sailing now, that my troubles were over. You're nodding your head. And that the hurt and the pain would never come back again. A few years into my recovery, I started a new job as a therapist in a wilderness therapy program, working with teenagers. And I was on the way to work one day, and I received a phone call from really good friends of mine. I had moved to the Adirondacks in New York State from Northern Virginia. And my friend called me to tell me that my friend Bob had died. As a direct result of this disease of addiction. And for me, that was the very first personal, very close friend of mine to have succumbed to this. And for many months after that, I struggled deeply with why God would take him, with why there was this pain when I knew there was so much hope. Why would God do this to us? And it took me a lot of anger and questioning and challenging times to realize that God wasn't doing this to us. God wasn't punishing. God wasn't damning. That this was something that I, right now, just wasn't going to be able to wrap my brain around. I wasn't going to be able to understand. But that God could use some tragedy like this to maybe help to bring about some good. And as I was walking through that journey, I was working with a bunch of teenage boys. So my patience was tested on a regular basis. but these boys and these young men, they were incredible. You know, I mean, they were struggling with a lot of life challenges and making a lot of really not great choices. And many of them were also struggling with addiction, even at 15, 16, 17 years old. And I would help them as best I could and help their families and prepare them, as I thought I knew how, to transition out of my program, right? To transition on to back home, to their own communities, to you know, a life filled with a whole lot of hope. Because for them, a lot of their hope had been trampled on, had been diminished. I would hear from many of them throughout the years, some of them doing really, really well, and some of them continuing to struggle. And there was one common thread among those who were struggling with alcoholism and addiction is that they would go back home and there would be a lack of support. You know, we have incredible, incredible programs we've heard about today. And for these young people, going back home and going back into their schools in particular was really difficult and challenging for them. They would go back home and I would hear things of, you know, Miss Sarah, I go back and all my friends are still using and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to find new friends. This is really hard for me. I go back home, Miss Sarah, I was the big time drug dealer. I like that attention. I have to find a whole new identity now. And through my own journey and my own career, I've discovered that it can be really, really difficult for these young people who really want to make a change when they go back home to be in that kind of community. And to create something different. When an adult goes to treatment or enters into recovery, we tend to have a few more options in terms of the people we spend our time with and how to change those things. And young people, they can struggle. So fast forward a few more years, and my family and I are now living down here in Frederick, Maryland. And we're starting to make a life for ourselves and build roots. And lo and behold, we connect with this family who has become spiritual guides to my husband and I and to our daughter. And this family are the godparents to Jackie. And lo and behold, Jackie's godfather is a graduate of the very first recovery high school that ever existed in the United States. And as I was working in this field, I started to hear of these things, recovery high schools, and did a little research and thought, gosh, this is a pretty, you know, incredible novel concept. And here's Jackie's godfather having been a graduate who on July 5th will have 30 years of continuous recovery. So here I am being faced with like, wow, this is something that's powerful, that can be life-changing, that can give hope, right, to my friend Bob, who forgot about that hope, right? Maybe there's a way to bring hope to these kids. So John knew about my story, knew about the work that I do professionally, and asked me to join a small group of people down in Washington, D.C. to investigate the possibility of starting recovery high school and trying to bring about this hope for other young people. Unfortunately, for a lot of different reasons, that did not come to fruition. And here we are again, thinking, geez, here's a way to bring some hope, and we don't know what to do. We're hitting roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. So disheartened, we stepped away from that project. A little over a year ago, John came to me again and said, Sarah, you know, this has been weighing on my heart. And I said, it's been weighing on mine too. And I don't know where God needs us to be, but we can't give up on this. We know it's needed. And he said, Sarah, I think we can do this in Frederick. I think it's needed here. I think this is where God is calling us to be. And I took a really big deep breath and I said, oh, okay. Which sometimes to me are like, you know, the two most powerful words that I can have. I can set aside any resistance and just show up and see what God's got in store. And I said, okay, John, let's let's see. So a little over a year ago, he and I got together, had been talking to a lot of other members in our community, and had our very first community meeting to see if we could actually make this thing a reality here in Frederick, Maryland. And not many of us had a whole lot of experience in nonprofit management or even formulating a nonprofit. We had none. And so we then learned what we needed to do to formulate a nonprofit, because we knew that's, you know, what would be some of the first steps in creating what could be a recovery high school here in Frederick. And we submitted our paperwork, anticipated, because we heard from other people, right, in the nonprofit world, this is going to take a few months. You guys got to, you know, hang tight. 3 weeks later, we got our paperwork back and got approved our 501c3 status. And we heard from everybody that does not happen. And we said, okay, God, we're buckling up. Here we go. A few months after that, we had our very first, our inaugural gala. a fundraising gala where we made connections with many, with sheriff's departments, the police, state's attorneys, schools, the big players in this community who we know supported us as well. We then knew, okay, some of the next steps are going to be to find a location. Where are we going to have this school? We had started our nest egg of funding, so we know we're going to need that. Where are we going to have a location? And we searched and searched and searched. And we found a location that we absolutely love. It's an old farmhouse. It was built in the 1800s. When you walk into the property, it feels like a schoolhouse. The experience that myself and many of the board members had when we walked into this property was bursting into tears, because we knew this is where it could be. And we then were faced with the fact of, okay, we anticipate we could get this school going in the fall of 2020. In the meantime, we're not going to have any funding. We don't know how to do this. And we felt, God, you know, we feel like we have this incredible space. If this is not the space for us, we are open to that as well. And we really like this place. And as many of us prayed about this and weighed the pros and cons, we had a community member come to us and say, I've been working with you all for a year. I know what you're doing, and I support this work, and I want to give you the money to pay for this lease for your first year before you're operational. So we as a board have accepted that donation, and we signed the lease on the space only a few months ago, so we have our property, and we are not going to have to be spending any money our first year. We're going to be able to utilize this space without those expenditures. You know, and I can say all those amazing things as well, right? But here's where I see God at work the most is, you know, I believe that we forget whose we are. And that through alcoholism and addiction, it robs us of that. And that this school could be a place where kids not only are able to access their education, but are able to be reminded of whose they are. That they have worth, they have value, that they have dignity, that they can be open to God's grace and mercy. And as many of us go out into the community and talk to people about this, and as other board members go and ask for money about this, because they're more comfortable with asking for money. I'm not. I want to be the policy person. Here's what happens. As we walk up to members of our community and let them know what we're doing, they then come to us and say, gosh, this is amazing. This is remarkable. I am so grateful that this is happening here. And can I tell you about my daughter? Can I tell you about my brother? I want to tell you about my cousin. And we hear all of these stories, often of hurt and pain, and of forgetting of whose we are. And often it's of hope, right? It's of hope, it's of strength, it's of remembering of whose we are. And as we move forward in this, as God has reminded me in the past year, we hope to bring the school here to Frederick to help be that platform. Not just to give these kids the education that they need in a sober environment, but to remind them of whose they are. And with that, I also have a short video that I would like to share that can also walk you through this journey probably much more eloquently than I can. Thank you.